Okay, so again, I want to thank Dina for organizing this and organizing the topic. And I guess this is not a typical halacha lecture, although I think there is some halacha involved. And I guess we're talking a bit about Hanukkah. And I don't think, generally speaking, that Hanukkah, or I don't think we should view holidays as men's holidays or women's holidays. I think each Jewish holiday is to be celebrated by both men and women. And each man and woman have a different share, let's say have a share in every single holiday. And yet, I think that when it comes to Hanukkah, I think Hanukkah is a little bit unique in that the role of women is highlighted in this context. And I actually would like to argue tonight that the story of Hanukkah shines a light on a unique contribution that women have made to Judaism. Now, it should be noted that the specific responsibilities of women with respect to three halachos or customs of Hanukkah are unclear. So one thing that's unclear is, number one, lighting the menorah. Women who are, regarding women who are married, I'm sure if we were to do a survey in our shul, I'm sure some women light their own menorah and some women do not light their own menorah. That's what I would guess. So that's not clear. Number two, another, and this is more of a custom, there's a custom to eat dairy. And this seems to relate to a story of women feeding an enemy dairy food, but the whole nature of the story is actually very unclear. Finally, there's a third custom or halacha relating to women that's unclear. There's a custom not to work when candles are lit, and it's not clear whether this custom is that only women shouldn't work, or that does this restriction apply to both men and women. So I want to sort of discuss these three and use these three halachos or customs and use them to perhaps demonstrate the special contribution that women have made to Judaism, specifically through the story of Hanukkah. So let's begin with the first issue, the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. So on the surface, women should be exempt from the mitzvah of lighting the menorah. Why would you say that? Why would you say women should be exempt? We can do participation if you want. You can unmute yourself. Why would women be exempt? Yeah.
Time bound.
Yes, it's well, be more, a little more specific.
Mitzvahs aseh shehazman k'vav.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. A positive time bound, right? It's a mitzvah shehazman k'vav. So in other words, it's a time bound. It's a mitzvah shehazman k'vav. It's a time bound commandment, a positive time bound commandment, and yet the Gemara in Megillah, Daf Dalet Amud Aleph, this I have on the source sheet, says that Amar Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos b'mikra Megillah, Shav Hein Hayu b'osamaneis, women are obligated in Megillah, even though Megillah is also a positive time-bound commandment, because they were also part of the miracle. Now, there's a famous debate as to what this line means, Shav Hein Hayu b'osamaneis, that women were part of the miracle. And this is a question. There are three mitzvos, that are positive time-bound commandments that women are obligated because they were part of the miracle. One is reading the Megillah, one is lighting the Hanukkah candles, and one is the four cups of wine. So one explanation of Av Hein Hayu B'Osamaneis, that's Rashi, and this is the second source, Rashi in Megillah Daf Dalet, it says, Sha'af al Hanashim Gazar Haman Lashmi L'Harugal Abed Minar Vadzakim Tafanashim. That what? That even upon the women, Haman decreed to destroy. In other words, why are women obligated on the in the mitzvah of not just Megillah, but all these types of also, the Ner Hanukkah would also apply? Because Ner Hanukkah, the restrictions against the Jews apply not just to men, but also to women. Women were beneficiaries of the miracle, just like men were, and therefore their obligations should be the same. That's sort of one way of looking at it. But Tosfos cites the Rashbam, who has a different explanation, and he says it's not that women were the beneficiaries of the miracle, but Perish Rashbam Sheikar Hanes Haya Al Yadam, that the miracle was accomplished through women. But Purim Ayde Esther, Purim through Esther, Chanukah Ayde Yehudis, Chanukah through Yehudis, the Pesach. And Pesach, Shebishus, Tzidkari, Shebosador, Nigalu. And Pesach, the righteous women, they were redeemed. Again, I only want to focus on Chanukah. So according to Tosfos, so there's this woman named Judith or Yehudis or Yehudit, who she apparently accomplished the miracle, or she was very involved in bringing about the miracle of Chanukah. Now the as a side point, the women are personally obligated the mitzvah of Megillah and Arba Kosos. The Maharshal Rav Shlomo Luria writes that one candle suffices for both husband and wife. Elio Rabba explains that that's based on the principle of Ishto Kegufo, that the man and man, a husband and wife are like one unit. It would seem, according to this position, that there's no inherent difference or preference for the husband to light over the wife. It would seem from the Elio Rabba that you'd have one menorah for men and women. For husband and wife, and either party probably could light. That's not. There are some achronim who say that women don't light. Teshuvas Ola Shmuel says women don't light because they are secondary. The Chasam Sofer says, what does that mean? It means because women, that the menorah was lit outdoors, and the women did not go outdoors, at least in days of the Gemara. Now, Rav Lichtenstein did not find this argument compelling, and he said the following. Rav Lichtenstein said, quote, in the house of Rabbi Soloveitchik of blessed memory, it was the custom that the women did light, and that is how I practice in my house. As we have seen, according to the simple halacha, women have the identical obligation to light as men. He who is of the opinion that the law is different, let him bring proof to support his position. And in his Sefer Nefesh HaRab by Rav Herschel Schachter, he also writes that Rav Soloveitchik ruled that even married women should kindle their own Chanukah light. So bottom line is that women seem to have the option. If they want to light their own menorah, there's certain that seems to be the simple halacha. And if they want to light together with their husband, so there's a concept of Ishto Kegufo. On the surface, there seems to be two legitimate perspectives as to why women are obligated in this mitzvah. Either they were beneficiaries of the mitzvah, or they helped bring about the salvation. Now, there may be a difference hashkafically, philosophically, between these perspectives. Because if you think about it, if we're saying that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, because just like men, they were beneficiaries of the miracle, so there's nothing, according to this, there's nothing significant that women specifically added to the story. Not saying that they were secondary to the men, but it's just that there was a decree on all the Jews, and all the Jews were saved, both men and women, and therefore women light the menorah. They were, that the women were part of the nation called the Jewish people that were saved. However, maybe if the women helped bring about the salvation specifically, according to the Rashbam, then maybe there is something significant that women contributed to the story, and not just to the story, but to Judaism in general. What's clear is that some of our Chanukah customs reinforce the notion that we follow the second option. In other words, there are two legitimate perspectives. Were women beneficiaries of the miracle, or did women cause the miracle? But that being said, it seems that we paskin like the second approach. Why is that? Because there are two special women's customs. The first custom is, and I actually mentioned this earlier on in the shir, the first custom in Orach Chaim, Siman Tofresh Ayin Sif Beis, cites an Ashkenazi custom. Yesh Omrim, Sheyesh Lechol Gvina b'Chanukah. You have the custom to eat dairy during Chanukah. Lefi Shehanes Nase b'Chalav, because the miracle happened with milk or dairy. Sheachila Yehudis Esa Oyev, that Yehudis fed the enemy. In other words, the custom that we have on Chanukah reflects the second option of these two different approaches, that the women were not beneficiaries, but women actually caused the miracle. And in fact, we have a custom that on Chanukah that we follow, that some people follow, to have spindly have dairy, and they are, and the custom assumes that it's that the women, on account of the women, according to Yehudis, so the miracle happened. And the Mishnah Brura explains, what does it mean, Shehechila Yehudis? He haisa bito shel Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So what was the story? According to the Mishnah Brura, Yehudis was the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Right? Remember, in the Al Hanisim prayer, we refer to Matisyahu, who's the son of Yochanan Kohen Gadol. So I guess she was the sister, I guess, of Matisyahu. And Vahoysa Gzeira, there was a decree, Shekol Arusa Tiboel Letafsar, that every bride should first have relations with the governor, the Syrian governor. Vahila LaRosh Shatsorim Gavira Lishichruso Vachatras Rosho. What did she do? She didn't like this decree. So instead, she fed the head of the enemy dairy, made him drunk. She cut off his head, and they all fled. And presumably, this started the revolt. Okay? So the truth is, I want to question the Mishnah Brura's account. I do not believe that the historical sources actually bear out what the Mishnah Brura writes regarding the story. I actually don't think it's the Mishnah Brura's fault. The truth is, there are a number of midrashim, and it was a little too long for me to bring it on the source sheet, but because I only have it in Hebrew, but if someone wants it afterwards, I can send it to them. There are a number of midrashim that were written by Chazal, by our sages, which talk about the story of Hanukkah, and about also this woman named Yehudis, that are found in a collection called Otsar Midrashim. So let's try to put them together and see exactly what happened. So on the entry of Yehudis in Otsar Midrashim. Otsar Midrashim is a collection of stories or rabbinic stories, and they have different topics. So on the topic of Yehudis, there are two versions of the Yehudit story, one longer than the other, and they present a story of the city of Jerusalem under siege, and everyone is terrified and everyone is unwilling to engage their foreign conquerors. Yehudis goes with her loyal maid to the camp of the enemy general Holofernes, to whom she ingratiates herself, promising him information on the Jews, gaining his trust. She is allowed access to his tent one night as he lies in a drunken stupor. She decapitates him, then takes his head back to her fearful countrymen. The enemy, having lost their leader, disperse, and the Jews are saved. According to these midrashim, the enemy general was a Syrian Greek leader, and thus the story of Yehudis takes place presumably around the time of Hanukkah. It should be noted that there is a biblical apocryphal book called Judith. What that means, an apocryphal book means that the book of Judith was not included in our traditional Tanakh, a traditional Bible. Like those who are studying Nach Yomi, you're not going to study a book called Judith. It's not considered Kisvei Kodesh, but it does appear, for example, in the Roman Catholic Old Testament. But there is actually a book about our heroine named Yehudit, and it tells essentially the same story as we find in the Midrashim, except it doesn't take place around the time of the Hanukkah story. Rather, Holofernes was a Syrian general of Nebuchadnezzar who destroyed the first Beis Hamikdash, and he was dispatched to take vengeance on the nations that withheld their assistance to his reign. So according to the book of Judith, Holofernes lays siege not to Jerusalem, but to a city called Bethulia. But the rest of the story essentially matches the Midrashic account. Anyway, that's the Yehudit story. And if we agree with the Midrashic account and not the account in the book of Judith, which may have simply been a historical novel, then Yehudit indeed is a Hanukkah heroine. So I want to share with you now another entry that's found in the Otsar HaMidrashim, in the entry of Hanukkah. So what was Hanukkah according to Chazal? So there are two basic versions that I want to share with you. According to the first version, if you look up the Otsar HaMidrashim and the title Hanukkah, so they tell you there were many evil decrees that were issued against the Jews by Antiochus. And many of the decrees were directed at destroying the Jewish family life of the Jewish people. For example, there was a decree that Jews were not allowed to put locks on their doors so that anyone can walk in at any time, and this disrupted the intimacy of the Jewish people. They could no longer be intimate and private, but the Jews remained modest. Then there was a decree that any woman who goes to the mikveh will be killed, and anyone who sees a woman go to the mikveh has the right to marry her, and she and her children will be slaves to the individual who sees her. So the Jews stopped being intimate because they didn't go to the mikveh. but the Midrash describes a miracle, how they were able to build mikvahs in their houses. Now, that would have been a very expensive mikvah appeal. Now, the most devastating decrees against the Jewish family life was that every new bride must have relations with a local governor, and this decree lasted for 3 years and 8 months. And if you think now that there's a shidduch crisis, back then after the decree, there was a major shidduch crisis, and the Midrash describes how the Greeks ravaged young women until the daughter of Matisyahu married a man, and there actually is the daughter of Matisyahu, didn't say the daughter of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, but the daughter of Matisyahu married a man, and on her wedding day, she ripped part of her wedding dress, and all the guests were aghast. How could you do this, act in such an inappropriate manner? It's not modest. So she responds to them, you want to know what's not modest? I'll tell you what's not modest. The fact that all of our brides must submit themselves to the local governor, that is not modest. Now her mood, according to the Midrash, her words moved those present at the wedding, and it was then and there that the revolt was born. She and her brothers, led by Yehuda HaMakabi, told the leading Syrian official that it does not befitting for her to have relations with the local governor. After all, she is one of the leading Jewish families, and she should have relations with the governor of the leading Syrian official. So he agreed, and while they were in his palace, she and her brothers killed the official and all of his men, and the revolt began. Now, related to this Midrash, there is a work called Megillas Ta'anis. Megillas Ta'anis lists a number of holidays that the Jews celebrated during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, and one of the days was the 17th of Elul. This was the day that the decree for virgin brides to have relations with the local governor was canceled. In any case, according to this version of the Midrash, there's no mention of Yehudis. But in another version, the story of Yehudis is a sequel to the story of the daughter of Matisyahu. In other words, after the beginning of the revolt that was initiated by the daughter of Matisyahu, in which a local official was killed, Antiochus sent a capable general, presumably Holofernes, to quell the rebellion, and he laid siege in Yerushalayim until the story of Yehudis, which when, due to her cunning, Holofernes was killed and the Syrians retreated. Essentially then, what emerges from these two Midrashim is that there were two different stories of two courageous women who took leading roles in the revolt. First, the daughter of Matisyahu, and secondly, Yehudis. And our halachic authorities acknowledge the role of Yehudis. Tosfos, and by the way, the Meiri also both write that women are obligated in the miracle of Ner Chanukah because a woman was a heroine in the story. Only Yehudis is acknowledged, by the way, in Tosfos, not the daughter of Matisyahu. That's interesting. It seems that at some point, these two stories were mistakenly merged into one story. There's a student of the Ravid in the 12th century. He wrote a book called Sefer HaManhig. And in his work, the two stories are combined into one story. There's a decree that all new brides must have relations with the local governor. And then the daughter of Matisyahu, named Yehudis, saved the day by killing the high-ranking official. Note that in the original Midrash, the daughter of Matisyahu does not kill the official, but the brothers do. But in the story of Yehudis, she actually kills the king. Now, this combined story found its way into another halachic work called the Kolbo, a French halachic work of the 14th century. And this is the basis for what I believe is the Mishnah Brura's mistaken understanding that what? That Yehudis, daughter of Matisyahu, killed the enemy as a result of the decree of the new brides. When in fact, if you look at the Midrashim, these were two separate stories. By the way, as a side point, the story that perhaps your children or grandchildren are coming home from school with is actually a different story. What's that story? That's a story that how the revolt started. Matisyahu killed a Hellenistic Jew in Modi'in who was about to offer a pagan sacrifice, right? That he wanted to offer a pig, and Matisyahu killed this Hellenist. Now, this is found in a historical work called Josephus. Josephus was a Jewish person who lived in the Roman era around the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and he wrote a history of the Jews during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash. And that's how he says the revolt starts. And this is probably more commonly known. And this is, by the way, pure speculation. Maybe when we tell the story to young children, maybe it's better to tell this version about the person who wants to offer the pork, which is Josephus' account, rather than the Midrashic version, which talks about, you know, intimacy and the women trying to seduce the men. So it's interesting that that's not the story. The Holofernes, the story of Yehudis and the daughter of Yochanan, daughter Matthew, those aren't the stories that we tell our kids in school. But what's clear, according to the Midrashim, is that the incident which precipitated the revolt was an act against the Jewish family. There were other decrees from the prohibition of Bris Milah to the prohibition of Shabbos observance, but it's the attack on the Jewish family which finally found one and perhaps two heroines, the daughter of Matisyahu and then Yehudis, who were an integral part in the revolt which resulted in the miracle of Hanukkah. And therefore, the custom to have dairy highlights the special heroic role of women in the story of Hanukkah. And by the way, there's a second custom. And that's the last source I have here. And the last source in Or HaChaim, Simon, Tav Resh Ayin, Seif Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch says, V'noagos, the second line here, V'noagos Hanashim, and the custom is that the women, among the women, Shelo Lasos Malacha, Ba'od Shehaneros Dolkos, that they don't do work at the time when the candles are being lit. So the Anyesh Misha Omer, and some say, Ein Lahakel Lahem, don't be lenient to allow them to do work. So there's a custom that women do not do work. There's a discussion what types of work should not be done at this time. But what's fascinating is that the custom is that only women don't do work. It is true, the Mishnah Brura quotes Eliyahu Rabbo, quotes the Maharil, who says that even men are included in the custom, but the simple reading of the Shulchan Aruch is that this custom only applies to women, that women don't do work. Some say it's sort of like work that's forbidden during Chol HaMoed. Some say that that's the work that's forbidden. And the question is, of course, why? The Magen Avraham explains that specifically women are exempt from work because, again, the miracle was performed through women. Again, we highlight the active role of women in bringing about the miracle that is so significant that it results in two special Hanukkah customs, dairy and no work while the candles are lit. So the question is, why do we emphasize the role of women in the story of Hanukkah? I think it's because the actions of these few women essentially help shape our Jewish faith forever. The story of Hanukkah is actually, I believe, the first time that a group of people were willing to die for an ideal, for a set of values. The Beis HaMikdash was, the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed beforehand. That is correct. Haman wanted to destroy the Jewish people. But this was the first time where basically a group of people, someone told, or a nation told a group of people that you need to change your values or we will kill you, we will wipe you out. And the Jews could have, if the Jews would have adopted Hellenistic practices, they would not have been killed. This is the first time in world history that any group of people were willing to die for a set of ideals. And this is the first episode of Jewish persecution in history. The Greeks naturally assumed that the Jews would give up their values rather than die. And again, we've done this. We have a long history of doing that. But this was the first time, and the Greeks were surprised. And for a long time, the Jews were passive. And the Jews resigned to the religious indignities that they suffered in the hands of the Greeks. And there is, of course, one more famous heroic story of Hanukkah. In chapter 8 of the second book of Maccabees, Antiochus arrested a mother and her seven sons and tried to force them to eat pork. When they refused, he tortured and killed the sons one by one. The narrator of this book mentions that the mother, quote, was the most remarkable of all and deserves to be remembered with special honor. She watched her seven sons die in the space of a single day, yet she bore it bravely because she put her trust in the Lord. Later versions name this woman Hannah and her seven sons. And Hannah exhibits incredible strength of conviction in remaining faithful to God during this unspeakable tragedy. And before the story of Hanukkah, if I were to ask you, what is the definition of strength? We might have said that the definition of strength is physical strength. The Greeks had superior physical strength, so they were going to impose their will on the Jews, and the Jews had to submit. But the daughter of Matisyahu, and later Yehudis, taught the Jews that there is another type of strength. It is the strength of spirit. It is passion. It is a strength of conviction that we refuse to bow to the Greeks' worldview. How dare the Greeks think that they can defile our young brides on the night of their wedding? We absolutely will not stand for it. Or Hannah saying that my faith is unshakable despite the price that as a mother I must pay. Yes, certainly thousands of years ago, the men have physical strength, but the women possessed the strength of spirit, the passion, the commitment to family life, and their values. And that inspired the rest of the nation to take up arms against the enemy to protect these very values. And I believe it was during this time in history that we as Jews redefined what true strength was. And this new definition of strength, of conviction, of passion, carried us through thousands of years of persecution when we refused to assimilate, when we refused to convert out of our faith, and when we refused to compromise our Torah values, no matter what the enemy did to us. So whether women decide to light their own menorah or fulfill the obligation with their husband's lighting, be rest assured that we value our women's contribution during the Hanukkah story, and we actually developed two customs to highlight this contribution. And make no mistake about it, it wasn't merely a contribution to the Hanukkah story, but it was a contribution that helped shape the character of our Jewish nation forever. So I wish everyone a Hanukkah Sameach, and hopefully